Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Considered the godfather of the modern legal thriller, the master of the courtroom drama, new from number one New York Times bestselling author Scott Turow, The Last Trial. The courtroom drama his fans have been waiting for, the culmination of two incredible lives in one explosive case. As Scott's beloved character, Sandy Stern, returns to the Kendall County courtroom to defend one of his oldest friends from ruinous charges. The author, 11 best-selling works of fiction, including Presumed Innocent, The Burden of Proof, Reversible Errors, and Innocent, all made into films, two nonfiction books. His books have been translated into more than 40 languages, sold more than 30 million copies worldwide, numerous awards, the cover of Time magazine, all that, and a distinguished ongoing legal career. The Chicago Tribune calls Scott Turow America's very best creator of legal thrillers, his newest, The Last Trial, and he joins us on This Week in America. Scott, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rick. It's great to be with you.
Looking forward to talking about this, and this is interesting. Sandy Stern, your longest-running character, now 85, decides to take on one last trial. Now, you've said he's always been in some part of your imagination. Tell me about the decision to bring him back for what is likely his last trial.
You know, how I settled on going back to Stern, I can't really say. Sandy made his last major appearance in Innocent, which was the sequel to Presumed Innocent.
Yes.
And at the time, he was suffering from cancer. It advanced metastatic disease. He tried this case in Innocent with his face kind of ravaged by a rash as a reaction to one of the chemotherapies. And readers wrote, who are almost as fond of Sandy Stern as I am, saying, oh, is Sandy going to die? Please, please say he's not going to die. And, you know, a character like that's a treasured creation. I instinctively said, no, he's not going to die. But when he made his usual cameo in my last novel, Testimony, it refers to him as living in the alternate universe of cancer remission. And I said to myself, gosh, the guy had advanced stage 4 lung cancer, back in 2010. What accounts for his longevity? And I said to him, well, he must have been lucky and found some therapy that worked for him. You know, I decided, well, you know, maybe there's some new cancer wonder drug. Of course, G. Livia, the highly imaginary drug that's at the heart of The Last Trial. So I started saying, you know, what could account for this? How could you get a drug like this? I started doing reading about cancer research. And of course, by then I realized that I was in Stern's world. I guess I tried writing from the first person briefly, but I didn't find Sandy to be interesting enough as a speaker. Just a little bit formal, tiny bit stilted, and not somebody inclined in the confessional mode. So I ended up, fooling around and poking away and writing paragraphs. And I think the moment where I really knew that I had set sail was when I imagined this conversation between Stern and his daughter, who had been his law partner for 30 years, that began in The Burden of Proof, my second novel. She walks into Stern's office and tells him that she's going to retire. And since she's a full generation younger, this just totally throws him for a loop. But he says, you're going to retire, so am I. And so the case that he's trying for the inventor of G. Livia's longtime friend, Carol Pafko, is a former Nobel Prize winner, now brought low by being accused of fraud. This case will, without question, be Stern's last appearance in a courtroom.
And this is how so many people will remember him. In fact, you mentioned the doctor, this world-renowned doctor, murder charges, insider trading, fraud. This is so much on the line for each of these, for Sandy Stern and for the doctor. Let's talk about Sandy. He doesn't die, but he's older, and he starts right off with health issues. Mentally, he's still there, but a little bit off the fastball. How was that to write about him and sort of Sandy's latter stages, certainly of the legal profession, the latter stages of life?
Yeah. Novelists have this romantic saying about when things are going well, that the characters take on a life of their own. And Stern has always been in complete control in the courtroom. And as I started to write about him, I found him blurting things out that the Sandy Stern of 30 years ago never would have done. And he's still very sharp most of the time. But every now and then there's a lapse. And, that pleased me, that he wasn't on some magic carpet, but was living the life that all of us live.
Yes.
And confronting the limitations of age. And, and the book is a great deal about aging. Stern is 15 years older than I am. But, I passed 70 last year. And you can't kid yourself when you get to 70. There's a lot more in the rear view than in,
yes,
than out the front window. And you begin to take stock. And Stern is ahead of me in life, but I've enjoyed hearing about his reflections on what he's going through.
Well, and we go through those reflections as readers. We're used to seeing him as almost faultless in the courtroom, now making some blunders, and I think we all stop and contemplate, boy, we're getting older, maybe we're losing a little bit. But I love when you talk about Sandy sleeping in his dreams, he still runs like a deer. I still run
right,
like a deer in my sleep, so I know exactly what you're talking about on that. With us is Scott Turow, best-selling author. His book, The Last Twilight, explosive new legal thriller by the number one New York Times best-selling author, is available wherever books are sold. You can link onto our website and get all the information there as well. Let's talk a little bit about the defense of a friend. How difficult is that? And it's an eye-opener for Sandy because he thinks he knows the doctor, but he really doesn't know the doctor. And he basically is going in to save this guy's life in the courtroom. How difficult is that situation, having a friend for a client, especially in a criminal case?
Yeah, I've done it a couple of times. So to some extent, I speak from experience. And as Stern thinks to himself at one point, if you're trying to improve your opinion of someone you know, becoming his criminal defense lawyer is not generally the way to do it. And you are bound to learn things about your client that are not necessarily pleasing. I remember a few years ago, I represented a grade school chum, and my junior partner came back from reading the pre-sentence investigation. This guy ultimately pled guilty. And she said, I'll go over there and read it tomorrow. And she said, don't do it. You've known this guy all your life. You're just not going to want to read what's in there. And I took her advice. But it can be very disconcerting to have known somebody for years and years and years and find out that there are large parts of their life that are unknown to you. Stern at one point thinks to himself, that John Donne said, no man is an island. We would be more polite and say no person is an island today. But Stern thinks that's exactly wrong. We are all islands, never fully known by anybody else. And that's very much his experience in representing Kirill Pashko.
With all of your books, we find fascinatingly flawed characters, layered characters. We certainly have that in The Last Trial. Also, talk about the pacing, because you do such an excellent job in your thrillers in giving us enough information, legal information, we understand what's going on, complex details. On top of that, in The Last Trial, you're introducing cancer research, drug development, FDA approval, the testing process for pharmaceuticals. Talk about doing that, because for most of us, that's basically a foreign language, giving us enough that we understand where the story is going, but not giving us more than what we need, where it slows the story down. You did an excellent job of that balance. How challenging was that?
It's really challenging. And, the book was published yesterday, and this rarely works out that way, but there were reviews in the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune and the Washington Post. And, overall, it sounded like my mother had written them. and what each review mentioned is the pacing, and that I managed to deal with a lot of complicated information without putting the reader to sleep. And I worked really hard at it, to tell you the truth, Rick. You need to say to yourself as a writer, okay, what does the reader really have to know to understand what is happening in the courtroom? And, there were things I did, like I explained the hearsay rule at one point. And I did such a concise job of it that I studied the paragraph and I thought, I'm not sure that I've ever explained this to myself any better than what I just wrote there, and it's just, a two or three line paragraph. But a lot of the technical stuff, whether we're talking about drug trials, pharmaceutical clinical trials or insider trading laws or courtroom procedure, you just try not to throw too much at the reader at once. And, at one point when I'm explaining how G-Livia, this miracle drug, works, I have Stern say to the jury, I'm going to tell you about this, but I have to tell you, I don't really understand it myself. So bear with me. And Of course, I have them say that because I don't want readers to feel put off if hearing about molecular proteins is a bridge too far.
It's interesting. In reading the reviews, they talk about Sandy's granddaughter. They describe her as a scene stealer. Talk about her and finding the voice for her. She's like 30 years old, a free spirit working on the case. In fact, there's some talk that you may do a novel based around her. How do you develop a character like that? A character, I don't know what personal reference you might have for someone like that. Where does that voice come from?
When a novel is going well, little miracles like Stern's granddaughter occur. And where she came from, I can't tell you. There is nobody in my life, neither my kids nor my stepdaughters, are anything like Pinky. Free spirit is a very kind way to describe
her. Very charitable, I thought, yes.
her aunt says that she's somewhere on the spectrum. And she's an incredibly socially awkward human being, but not introverted at the same time. So she's constantly making mistakes in the way she deals with people. She's not been terribly reliable. Stern looks over on the first day of trial and sees Pinky sitting at the defense table with a sense of relief, because it would not be the first critical moment at which she didn't show up. And, she's not the kind of young person that, you would want to parade in front of conservative jurors. She's actually got a 1-inch nail right through her nose, tatted up everywhere you can see. And I presume some places you can't, but, one of the things that happened as the book went on is the sort of revelation of the inexplicable bond between the grandfather and his granddaughter, who was his oldest grandchild. And in many ways, it is beyond the power of either one of them to explain, but they are remarkably important to one another. And Pinky finds her footing as a person during the course of the novel. So it was a lot of fun to meet her. I am trying to write about her now in a new setting. And I've made a lot of progress. I think I have a great twist ending, but I still am not fully settled into her voice, which is not surprising that a 71-year-old has to grapple a little bit to find the voice of a 33-year-old and an idiosyncratic one at that. But I'm gaining on it.
Well, you talk about in doing that process, you need to learn to be patient with yourself. And I'm thinking, boy, that may be a model for most writers out there. Don't force it. Be patient with yourself. Is that a key to all the success that you've had as a writer?
I was forced to be patient in the early years because I didn't have a lot of time to write. When I was a young assistant U.S. attorney or a younger partner at the Denton's law firm where I'm still hanging my hat. And I guess I learned from that that you need to trust your own creative process, and that if you stew with things, sooner or later, solutions will appear. And I wrote one book on order, as it were. The New York Times was serializing novellas, and they commissioned me to do one of these. And it was funny. I got a letter from Elmore Leonard, who I knew just a little bit, and Doug said, it's the worst experience I've ever had as a professional writer. And for me, it was not. I enjoyed it, but the writing fiction on a deadline there was something in it that, my spirit just revolted against. And I vowed that I was never going to do that again. And giving myself time and being patient with myself and figuring out these problems in a way that's going to please me is something I have learned to do. Especially as I've gotten older, you've got to be learning something by getting older, because otherwise it wouldn't be worth getting up in the morning. So that's one of the things I think I've gained as the years have gone on, is patience with myself.
Well, and you've talked about you've never been a fan of the factory. Sometimes you finish an author's book, and then a couple of weeks later, a new one is coming out. You've averaged one about every 3 years, and boy, they're worth the wait. They come out, and they go right to the top of the charts. A couple minutes left on the program. Scott Turow is with us talking about The Last Trial, his newest, which is now available wherever books are sold. Great information at his website, scottturow.com. Let's talk a little bit about Presumed Innocent, where it all started for you. That's going to be a screen project that you're working on. Tell us about that.
Well, my agents and my lawyers have sort of condemned me to bands of silence, so I can't say much about it except that it's a streaming project with one of the major studios, a great young screenwriter involved in it, and in Hollywood, there are many a slip, as Shakespeare said, between cup and lip, and we'll see how it all works out. As I said, I'm quite optimistic. A very talented team involved, but we're still at the sit back and wait stage. So, it's been. I'll tell you the one thing that's weird is within 4 months, three different writers or producers contacted me, all with the same idea to turn Presumed Innocent, an updated version, into a streaming project. So its time must have come, Rick.
Well, it seems like it, and it's great for us as an audience to go back and to see the story as it picks up. I've got a couple minutes left on the program. You've talked about when you write a book, there's always a character that somehow ends up with a bigger role than you imagined when you started. I think that's the case with Pinky in The Last Trial. Is that how Sandy got started? Was that going to be a focal character for you on down the line, or did that evolve as you were writing Presumed Innocent?
Well, I wrote Presumed Innocent over 8 years while I was an assistant U.S. attorney in Chicago. And when I started out with Rusty Savage, the prosecutor, and investigating the murder of his former lover, I didn't even know he was going to end up accused of the crime or on trial for that. So Sandy doesn't even appear in the book until page 190. He's been referred to in passing by lawyers in the prosecutor's office who were, complaining about him a little bit as a defense lawyer. And he was a scene stealer, to say the least. And, described as not being someone who is as physically impressive as Raul Julia, who played him. Who just has like a beacon inside him once he gets up in the courtroom. And, I became fascinated with him. And so much so that Stern ended up as the main character in my second novel, The Burden of Proof. But, being a novelist is a tremendous gig. And as I, tell my wife, I'm going to my office to play with my imaginary friend. and that's really what you're doing. And every now and then, one of them ends up being, somebody you did not expect to come to the party. And Sandy in Presumed Innocent, Pinky in The Last Trial were those characters for me. And it's one of the great discoveries and just sheer joys of being allowed to do, what I do for a living. It's as I said, you can't be more blessed than to be able to support yourself in the creative arts.
What is really amazing in talking with you and reading all of the interviews you've done for The Last Trial, the satisfaction is still there. I get the impression this is just as much fun for you as Presumed Innocent when you were trying to start this writing career. The time has gone by way too quickly. Scott Turow has been our guest on the program. His website, scottturow.com, but his book's available at every bookstore in all the different formats. The book is The Last Trial. You'll find the information at Scott's website, link on, go to our website as well. Scott, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully we can do this again sometime. Congratulations on the success.
I loved it.
Thank you.
And thank you for being so incredibly well prepared. It's just always a joy.
Well, you're welcome. It's a joy reading your book, and thank you for being well prepared. You give us hours of enjoyment with your reading. Scott Turow, our guest on the program This Week in America, back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.